This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer, in for Anthony Brooks. In this first week of 2013, it was out with the old and in with the new on Capitol Hill, including
Ms. Warren of Massachusetts.
That would be Senator Elizabeth Warren, the first female senator from Massachusetts. Also, John Kerry could become the next Secretary of State. Scott Brown isn't ready to announce if he'd run in a special election, but he is ready to weigh in on a potential competitor, Representative Edward Markey.
Does he still live here?
And in the interim, who will Governor Patrick appoint to fill John Kerry's seat? Congressman Barney Frank says he's the man for the job.
It was almost like, Coach, it's the fourth quarter and it's a tight game, put me in.
Plus, the nation avoids going over the fiscal cliff, but
the fact is, the deficit is still too high, and we're still investing too little in the things that we need for the economy to grow as fast as it should.
And after an eight-week hospitalization, Mayor Tom Menino is back in City Hall.
Once you stop being who you are, that's when you get in real trouble. And I'm not going to stop being Tom Menino.
Well, we'll dive into these stories and more, all with our Week in Review panel today. And joining us now to do so is Dante Ramos, Deputy Editorial Page Editor for the Boston Globe. Happy 2013, Dante.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back. Also with us today from Washington, D.C. is Andrea Seabrook. She's former congressional correspondent for NPR and now creator of the blog and podcast Decode D.C. Andrea, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks. It's so great to be here.
Such a huge fan of your reporting. Great to have you on the show. Let's dive in and begin with, again, that new Congress, the 113th. Two freshman politician from Massachusetts. First, Senator Elizabeth Warren.
I'm honored to be here. I'm excited. I'm ready to get to work. It's every part of that.
And on the House side, we now introduce you to Congressman Joe Kennedy III.
Walking through the halls, somebody from time to time pulls you aside and says, you know, hey, I knew your dad, I knew your cousin, I was a fan of your uncle. And I'm grateful for that. At the same time, obviously, this is me, and I'm getting lost in the hallways just like every other freshman at this point.
So, Dante, let's start with you. Two big names with national profiles from Massachusetts now in Congress. But overall, do you think that the congressional delegation may have actually sort of lost some heft and weight because we've exchanged big names for maybe some veteran politicians?
Sure, there's no denying it. The pressure is on for Elizabeth Warren, especially. John Kerry was the junior senator for Massachusetts for something like a quarter of a century. Elizabeth Warren could be our senior senator within a month. I think that the challenge for her especially will be to make a transition from being this sort of liberal firebrand and this populist crusader to being an influential policymaker of the sort that we're used to seeing here in Massachusetts, especially with Ted Kennedy. And I think in her areas of expertise, the financial stuff, that'll be, she shouldn't have it too difficult of a transition. You know, on areas where it's a little farther afield from her expertise, that might be more of a challenge.
Well, I'm sorry, Dante, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I was going to actually just quickly turn to Andrea and ask you, I mean, you've walked the halls of Congress for many years. How do you think, that body will receive Elizabeth Warren as a senator?
Oh, I think she is the right kind of person to be in that body. I think another woman in the Senate is always welcome. It's now up to a whopping 20% women in the Senate, but she in particular has distinguished herself as a fighter and the kind of person that also wants to make relationships. Those are the two things you need to be in the Senate. When you talk about Massachusetts losing some heft in its delegation, my mind immediately goes to Barney Frank.
Right.
I mean, he, for 32 years, he was in the House of Representatives. You know, the Dodd-Frank bill was written by him. The TARP, he had a lot to do with TARP. I mean, huge pieces of our fiscal financial puzzle in the United States were drafted and molded and made better over time by Barney Frank. And of course, there is a question about maybe he would get a little bit more time.
Right. We may not have heard the last from him yet. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. But before we fully step away from our freshman congressmen and senators, I did want to play a little bit of tape regarding maybe a hint we might have of the relationships, Andrea, as you were talking about, that Elizabeth Warren already has on Capitol Hill. Because in her post-swearing-in reception, who was there? None other than President Obama's senior advisor, David Axelrod.
I was very much in the corner of encouraging her to run in the first place, and I think she's going to make an exceptional senator. So I'm really proud of her. I'm proud of Massachusetts for sending her here.
So Dante, I mean, should we make anything of this? Because he may be proud of her now, but on the other hand, President Obama didn't exactly fight for Elizabeth Warren when she could have been the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that she essentially created.
Well, you know, we on the Globe editorial board had wished that he had fought a little bit harder for her, but you know, it may be that it just wasn't in the cards for her, and they saw that it wasn't going to happen. Ironically, she's now on the Senate Banking Committee with her former antagonist Richard Shelby, but. She comes into the Senate with a much higher profile from a lot of other new senators, and also, you know, she has a different kind of background from your conventional Massachusetts politician. You know, she got involved in national politics almost by accident when she was tapped to oversee the oversight panel for the TARP. And when she first surfaced as a Senate candidate a while back, you know, it seemed like a little bit of a stretch. Now, of course, it seems like, you know, of course this was foreordained, but it wasn't. And so, you know, the White House did certainly raise her profile to some degree.
Mm. Well, no. And she, I'm sorry, it's hard to stress enough how much of a boogeyman she was made out to be by the Tea Party caucus of the Republicans, especially in the House of Representatives. I mean, whether or not the White House fought enough for her, she was made toxic in terms of as being a political appointee. Being an actual senator means that she gets to take that energy and put it towards continuing, you know, to shape fiscal policy in this country. It will be fascinating to watch.
If we pivot to John Kerry, you know, we know that Congress by its nature can be a revolving door. But here in Massachusetts, we may be taking that to a new level, because if Kerry does become the next Secretary of State as expected, that means another special election here to decide who will replace him. And already some people who just left the Senate are being considered for his replacement to go back in. So let's start with one of them, Barney Frank, who was replaced by Joe Kennedy. Governor Patrick has said that he will name an interim senator before the special election. And here's what Barney Frank had to say about that today on MSNBC's Morning Joe.
A few weeks ago, in fact, I said I wasn't interested. It was kind of like you're about to graduate, and they said you got to go to summer school. But that deal now means that February, March, and April are going to be among the most important months in American financial.
So you'd consider it?
In fact, I'm not going to be coy. It's not anything I've ever been good at. I've told the governor that I would now like, frankly, to do that, because I would like to be a part of that. It's only a 3-month period. I wouldn't want to do anything more. I don't want to run again. Right. But yeah, I think for these, it's almost, to be honest, a little arrogant. Coach,
it's going to not be summer. It's going to be a cold winter.
Yeah, coach, put me in.
Now, Dante, just this afternoon, Governor Patrick said that Frank would make, in his words, a great interim senator. But the governor also says he's been talking to other people about filling this post. What do you think is the likelihood that Barney Frank ends up being the interim?
Well, the way that the governor has described the job, the interim job up to now, seems to work against appointing somebody like Barney Frank. You know, the administration had made it clear that they were looking for somebody who wasn't necessarily a political luminary, somebody who didn't necessarily have their own political agenda. You know, they were definitely indicating that they were looking for more of a caretaker type. One of the names that had surfaced had been Jay Gonzalez, who is the governor's loyal secretary of administration and finance. At the same time, I think the fiscal cliff deal does raise or lack of a permanent deal does raise the stakes on the whole thing. And there is a kind of logic to sending somebody who is already in Washington, knows Washington very well, Is conversant with all the issues, and to add to that, also has a reputation for decent constituent service, which is something that you want in an interim senator. Whether the governor, the governor has to have been surprised by Frank's breach of the usual decorum on this, and it makes you think that in going public, maybe Frank didn't expect that he was going to be appointed, and maybe wanted to be appointed interim senator by acclamation. But it certainly, puts a good argument on the table, I think.
And Andrea, as we just heard Barney Frank say, he only wants an interim appointment. But as he's explained it, he now sees the next few months as being quite exciting because of all the remaining fiscal cliff work left to do. So he's interested in a few more months. What do you think that Frank could do in the Senate that he couldn't or didn't do in the House?
Well, I think it's more that he could continue being a pivotal person in terms of ideas and negotiations over this, 2 years of fiscal tussling, financial tussling over the federal budget. If Deval Patrick were to put in somebody who didn't know as much, a Michael Dukakis or somebody else just as a placeholder into that position, they wouldn't be able to drop into the negotiations as easily as Barney Frank could. And to your point also, breach of decorum is, practically Barney Frank's middle name. he just says what he wants, and that's part of why it would be so interesting to see him in there for 3 months. It's very clear that he doesn't want to run again. And I think that Governor Patrick, when he was saying, we'd like to put somebody in who doesn't have designs on a political future, I think, Barney Frank has made it very clear by resigning, by saying he doesn't want to do beyond 3 months, that he wouldn't do that. And I think it could be fascinating.
Now, another name being batted around is outgoing Senator Scott Brown, replaced, of course, by Elizabeth Warren. And he didn't dispel that notion this week that he might run for Kerry's seat when he said this on the final Jim and Marjorie show on WTKK.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're making it awfully tempting, huh? You got Ed Markey. Does he still live here?
I didn't recognize him, frankly, when I saw him in the paper, Senator Brown. I didn't know who he was.
Well, you got to check the travel record. Now, I've come back and forth every weekend almost for 3 years, and I see most of the delegation. I've never seen Ed on the airplane, ever.
Now, Ed Markey has said that he's interested in running for the Senate, but here we have Scott Brown questioning Markey's state residency. So, Dante, is this Brown joking around, or is it actually a hint of what the tone might be like if Brown does run for the Senate again?
It's probably both. There's a real difference in a way between Scott Brown's kind of candidacy and Ed Markey's. Ed Markey has been in Congress for a really long time and represents a sort of incremental approach to legislation, and he has staked out specialties on different issues over the years. Brown obviously has, he kind of emerged on the scene much more quickly, and he's much more prone to making off-the-cuff comments like the one that you just heard. There was also the infamous kings and queens and prime ministers or whatever it was comment he made about different people that he had meetings with, and he tends to be off-the-cuff, which isn't as much Ed Markey's style, I think. And so, in a campaign, those personalities are going to get projected, and that may be the campaign we end up seeing.
And Massachusetts now is becoming the state of the endless campaign. But regardless of who joins the Senate from Massachusetts, they will still be part of the 113th Congress, which to me looks a lot like the 112th Congress insofar as political gridlock, low public opinion, especially in the face of what I think we should call fiscal cliff part two, spending cuts, still to be decided. But nevertheless, we've got some tape here of President Obama, who this week struck a hopeful tone.
The one thing that I think hopefully in the new year we'll focus on is seeing if we can put a package like this together with a little bit less drama, a little less brinksmanship, not scare the heck out of folks quite as much. We can come together as Democrats and Republicans.
Well, today the House did get a couple of things done. It approved the $9.7 billion flood insurance bill that could be the first part of a $60 billion Hurricane Sandy recovery package. And also this week, House Speaker John Boehner, even though he had been sharply criticized for not getting that package passed before the end of 2012, he was still reelected as Speaker. So here he is speaking to the new Congress.
If you come here humbled by the opportunity to serve, if you've come here to be the determined voice of the people. If you've come here to carry the standard of leadership demanded not by our constituents but by the times, then you've come to the right place.
So a choked up John Boehner there. But Andrea, true to his word about being a determined voice, I read in the LA Times that Boehner has promised his GOP colleagues a robust fight with President Obama about spending cuts in exchange for raising that debt ceiling, which we're going to hit very soon. So are people as right to be as pessimistic about the months to come as we're already hearing?
Oh, I think so. I think this Republican majority in the House of Representatives has proved its mettle in terms of sticking out to the last possible second before compromising at all. I mean, you know, the last 2 years, really the last 4 years, have been such an incredible case of whiplash. And Massachusetts is a brilliant example of that. To go from, you know, the wonderful, lauded Senator Ted Kennedy to Scott Brown to Elizabeth Warren. I mean, when she was sworn in yesterday, she talked about how her seat had been held by John Quincy Adams, by Daniel Webster, by Ted Kennedy, and what an honor it is. And it was also held by Scott Brown. I mean, you know, just the day before. And these negotiations have been the roughest that people can, you know, Barney Frank told me himself that he can remember reading in history since the Civil War. There have been, since then, he said, it has been, there haven't been this much acrimony in negotiations. And for anyone who reported the so-called deal about the fiscal cliff being some kind of end or reprieve in any way, it's not at all. It's a punt 2 months down to the next time that we do this exact same thing.
But Andrew, there you are in Washington, and you've covered this body, this group of people for so long. I take your point about the whiplash, like Massachusetts being emblematic of that. And yet it says, you know, we're still whiplashing on the same path towards inevitable gridlock. I mean, does it seem that there's any, you know, anything about the acrimony, you're saying, of the current negotiations that's making Washington itself wake up to the fact that, you know, yeah, people are frustrated?
Yeah. Well, you know, the polls couldn't be clearer. I mean, the American people, by and large, want some kind of compromise. They want to see their elected leaders working together to get the problem solved and stop focusing on the same thing over and over again. Furthermore, most recently, the polls have showed that if there isn't a deal reached, then Americans would overwhelmingly blame Republicans for that. That said, I think the people who are emboldened and who have changed somewhat in this fight over time is the Obama administration. I think the re-election just in November of President Obama really changed his view of the hand he was holding. And for example, yesterday or the day before, he said, "I will not negotiate on the debt ceiling again. I will not get to the point again where we are about to not pay our bills." And I think that's a warning for those Republicans that he is not going to let them go as far this time.
From Capitol Hill to Beacon Hill, Boston politics for a minute or two. Yesterday, Mayor Tomenino was back in his office at City Hall briefly for the first time after an 8-week hospitalization, and he suggested he may still seek a record 6th term as mayor this fall.
It's in you. You can't stop being who you are. Once you stop being who you are, that's when you get in real trouble. And I'm not going to stop being Tomenino.
Dante, what does this mean for Boston politics?
The mayor certainly he's being as shy about his attention his intentions as Scott Brown is, I think, at this point. You know, it's good for the city that the mayor's health has improved in the sense that, you know, we have a strong mayor system here in Boston, and it's bad when there's a strong mayor government and the mayor is sort of incapacitated for weeks or months. You know, obviously being back in office or being back, you know, closer to his office and out of the hospital is making the mayor think a new term is more realistic than he sounded like he thought possible a couple of weeks ago. You know, whether that's a good idea or not for him, I mean, I think he probably does need to think seriously. You know, he's 70 years old, fortunately back in better health, but, you know, has a series of health problems and, you know, probably does need to do some thinking about what would happen if a similar episode recurred in the future.
And Dante, briefly, for the many people who had hoped to be the next mayor, is the door shut for them for a while?
It's not a great sign for them. I mean, the way this process works is, you know, there's a lot of people who are itching to rise up and, you know, be part of a new generation of leadership in Boston. But, you know, it's hard to raise money when the existing mayor is still interested in the job. And, you know, a lot of people assume that if the mayor wants to continue in office, that he would actually delay announcing his intentions until past the point where it would be kind of difficult for somebody else to put together a campaign. You know, maybe around January, February, and March. We're sort of approaching that period now. So, you know, if he doesn't opt out soon, you know, one should assume that he probably is going to run again and that other candidates will obviously be shy about challenging him.
Because he's not going to stop being Tominino, Dante, of course.
Correct.
We've got just enough time for our hubbubs, and those are the stories that maybe didn't rise above the fold, as we say, this week. And Andrea, why don't we start with you? What's your hubbub this week?
Well, it was all the hubbub on Twitter last night. It was the fact that Cory Booker, the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, saved another person. This man should be issued an official New Jersey emblem emblazoned Superman suit.
Was it another burning building?
No, this time someone tweeted to him that there was an 80-year-old woman whose heat had broken and it was freezing, and apparently they had some conversation off Twitter, because then Booker himself tweeted back publicly, "I'm on my way," and then a few hours later, he tweets back that when he got there were children in the room, and he'd gone out and bought heated blankets and space heaters and delivered them and made sure that the city office the next day would be making sure somebody can get out there and work on her heating. I mean, this is a kind of service-oriented politics I think every American would like to see.
If only Newark didn't have its other 18,000 problems to deal with either. Maybe next time he should just stop off at a phone booth if there are any left
yeah,
in America
exactly,
and have his
exactly.
costume change. Sasha, your hubbub.
My hubbub is a photo. It was on the front page of the New York Times today, and it's a picture of a school bus. It's the kids at Sandy Hook Elementary going back to school yesterday to a school in a neighboring town for the first time in about 3 weeks since that terrible shooting. And despite how sick and gruesome and horrific that was, these kids on this picture are kids being kids. There's this little boy in a black and white zebra hat and scarf getup waving in this big furry paw. There's a little boy next to him giving this sort of peace sign, thumbs up. And I feel like it shows the kind of resilience of children, their irrepressible joy and silliness. And I hope it means that the scars won't be as deep and lasting as many of us are afraid they will.
Yeah, great hubbub. And really a wonderful picture, too, as
it
well.
Is.
Dante, your hubbub?
Mine is about a new study that was published just yesterday in Science Magazine by Harvard psychologist Daniel Gilbert and a couple of his colleagues. It turns out that people underestimate how much they're going to change over time. Change meaning the basic facets of their personalities, like anxiety or introversion or basic characteristics like that. The researchers are calling it the end of history illusion. It's the idea that the you that you are right now is as wise and emotionally developed as you will ever be.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible news.
It turns out actually not to be true, and that you will change over the next 10 years than you really would have thought possible. I personally find this especially comforting in the context of everything we've been talking about in today's news. You know, we're fretting about the fiscal cliff in the Senate race of 2010 and 2012 and 2013 and 2014. And, you know, looking back 10 years from now, we'll think, oh, how needlessly anxious we all were.
Thank you for that dose of hope. I needed that.
It's in short supply.
As is my custom in hubbubs, I am here to take the tone down a little bit or awkwardly so, because my hubbub is the Daily Beast for the second year in a row naming Boston America's drunkest city. Ladies and gentlemen, give yourself a hand. It's like cheers in our control room. Woo! Apparently, we have the largest, the Daily Beast asked the cities to, asked a marketing firm for data on the average drinks consumed per month in the city, the percentage of the population classified as binge drinkers, and the percentage of the population classified as heavy drinkers. Now, I would say with all our colleges and universities, maybe those that data was skewed a little. But still, at least this is one way we can say we beat New York City. That's my hubbub for today. Dante Ramos, Deputy Editorial Page Editor for the Boston Globe. Great to have you as always. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Andrea Seabrook, creator and host of the podcast Decode DC, and also at decodedc.com, the blog. So wonderful to have you, Andrea. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
Stay with us. We'll hear next about how geckos inspired a new generation of adhesives. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.